You are tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. The time is 9:03 a.m., and this morning, the coffee table is the Homer Public Library's celebration of lifelong learning. Many, many of the participants have sent us audio files because we are maintaining a safe social distance, and other people will be calling in, but here in the studio are your hosts for this evening, or this morning, Andy Haas from Friends of the Homer Public Library.
Good morning to you.
And Mercedes O'Leary, also Friends of the Homer Public Library.
Good morning, and actually it's Harness, but I don't mind being called O'Leary still.
Did I? Oh, my. All right, then, Mercedes Harness. And I just want you guys to take it away. I have some wonderful things here for when called upon. I have Janet Klein's 28 questions. We may be asking you some natural history questions to phone in. There are no prizes except the glory of celebrating lifelong learning.
That's wonderful.
Take it away, Andy and Mercedes.
Well, I just want to say welcome to Celebration of Lifelong Learning 2020. We are hosting this typically live event on air because the library, as you probably know, is closed until further notice due to the threat of COVID-19. We are so excited that you are listening in and so very grateful to KBBI for being flexible and providing this opportunity in a rather insecure time to celebrate. I think celebrating anything we can find to bring a little joy and light right now is really important. Andy, can you tell listeners what Celebration of Lifelong Learning is?
Yeah, sure. So every year, the Friends of the Homer Public Library recognizes lifelong learners for both an adult and a high school student. The Lifelong Learner Award recognizes someone in Homer who is a curious and dedicated learner and who reinvests her knowledge back into our town. This year, the youth learner is Anthony Malkomikoff, and Janet Klein joins a list of lifelong adult learners that we've celebrated before. The list includes such luminaries in our town as Daisy Lee Bitter, Walter Johnson, Norman Griffin, Carmen Field, Ken Kastner, Kyra Wagner, Michael Hawfield, Linda Chamberlain, Millie Martin, Lee Post, and the wonderful Flo Larson. That is quite a list. Just
a cavalcade of stars.
Oh, God. People that we all love.
Absolutely. And is there a new award this year?
Yes, there is. We have a special award. And, you know, there's been a really special person with the library over the years. Sue Gibson was just someone that everyone at the library loved. And she brought special things to the library that we wanted to recognize by having a periodic Sue Gibson Award starting this year.
Excellent.
And who's getting the Sue?
Dana Stabenow.
Excellent.
We also, this year at the live celebration, we're going to recognize some local students and statewide students for their work with STEM activities. And I believe Kathleen has some pre-recorded files.
What's a STEM activity?
Science, technology, engineering, art and math. That's actually STEAM.
STEAM.
And the library, we do a lot of STEAM at the library, encouraging kids to be makers, to learn how to code, to get interested in robotics. And there are a few girls in our town and in our state that have really excelled, especially through a program offered through the National Council on Women in Technology. Did I get that acronym right? NC?
The National Center.
Thank you.
For Women in Information Technology.
Excellent.
We are masters of acronyms.
Yes, we are.
And all of the four young women who are being honored here in Homer, they sent, because they're not afraid when I say, why don't you send me an audio file? They all made them last night. And we mixed it with the theme from The Legend of Zelda. I'm very excited about that, played by the London Philharmonic. And so let's hear from all of the honorees. NC WIT, the National Center for Women in Information Technology, planned to be at the Celebration of Lifelong Learning this year, but wisely decided to stay home. But four students in Homer are still receiving NC WIT's National Aspirations in Computing Award. It's the second year that Olivia Glassman and Delilah Harris are being recognized, and the first year for Fiona Hatton and Naviah Reed. All these young women are students at Homer High School and recorded and sent a short thank you message.
My name is Fiona Hatton, and I first became involved with Girl Scout at Alaska last summer. The student-led initiative, our goals are to educate young girls about innovative technology and inspire them to pursue technological careers. Our first camp, staged at the Homer Public Library, was very successful, and our four-person team is currently working on planning two new camps set to occur this coming summer. Working with three of my great friends on these camps has been a wonderful opportunity, and I'm very thankful for them as well as all of the support we have received from the community. I think I speak for our entire team when I say we are thankful for the award we recently received from NCWIT, yet the true joy and fulfillment comes when we see girls expanding their technological knowledge and realizing that they can create opportunities for themselves in the technological fields of today's world, which are largely male-dominant.
Hi, my name is Delilah Harris, and I'm just really honored to win this award again. I won this award last year with Olivia Glassman, and that gave us the opportunity to do our GGIT Alaska camp last summer. And then winning it again just means so much, along with the fact that Fiona Hatton and Navai Reed also are winning it, that we can work together and do the camp again and reach more girls in the community of Homer. I just want to thank Ashley and Savannah Loberger, because they brought this camp to us originally 3 years ago, and it just means so much that we're able to do this. And then finally, I want to thank the Homer Public Library and Claudia Haynes, because they give us the space and the resources to let us run this camp.
Hi, my name is Navaya Reed. I'm one of the girls from the Girls Get It program. The Girls Get It program is a program that helps inspire and empower young women to go out and practice innovative technologies. We do activities such as soldering, HTML, robotics, and 3D printing. All in all, it is a very fun group of people, and we always have a very good time.
Hi, my name is Olivia Glassman, and I am a co-leader for Girls Get It Alaska. I'm so honored to be receiving this award and be a part of the NCWIT community. It has been amazing to be able to give back to the Homer community that has supported me so much as I have grown up. Seeing firsthand girls get so excited when their webpage works or the LEDs they soldered light up is so rewarding, and I couldn't have witnessed it without all the support I have gotten along the way. When Ashley and Savannah Loberger's Girls Get It Camp came to Homer in 2018, it gave me the opportunity to learn computer science skills I had never been in contact with before. Without them and the opportunity they gave me, I might have never taken computer science classes or led an NCWIT camp. Claudia Haynes, our partner organization representative for our camps, and my mom has encouraged me so much and has helped Girls Get It Alaska grow in ways I never imagined it could. Delilah Harris and I have been a team since the beginning. I might have never volunteered that first year if she hadn't been there to do it with me. As our camp has grown, Fiona Hatton and Navaya Reed have joined our team, and without their commitment and determination to our camp, last year might have not been so successful. Thank you to NCWIT for funding our programs and giving new opportunities to so many girls. I can't wait for all the Girls Get It camps to come.
Haley Wallace of Mount Edgecombe School in Sitka is also part of this crew. They've been hosting computing camps, developing their own skills, and encouraging and instructing others to form a local community of young women in the field of information technology. Be on the lookout for announcements about upcoming Girls Get It technology camps. Congratulations to Fiona Hatton, Delilah Harris, Olivia Glassman, and Navaya Reed, all recipients of the National Center for Women in Information Technology's Aspirations in Computing Award. Well, that was very dramatic. There'll be more pre-recorded thank yous and speeches and such, ending up with a terrific address by Janet Klein, this year's lifelong learner, who made up 28 questions. These are her 28 questions about Kachemak Bay.
That's correct.
This is correct. So, if you know the answer to the question I'm about to ask, call 235-7721, and Lauren will pick up the phone and see if your answer matches Janet Klein's answer.
Are people allowed to pull out one of her books? Because I looked at her book far too recently. You know, I got it back in like 1990, and I only recently opened it again and found all the trivia questions I'd been missing at Alice's.
I just want to say that opening a book is not cheating. It's using all available assets.
Although I would like to add something.
Try not to Google it, though.
Yeah, try not to Google it. But some of these may not be in the book because Janet came in to the library about a week or so ago and updated those questions for current changes in the last few years. I know.
Well, here in the category of biology. Question. Name three marine mammal species that are permanent residents of Kachemak Bay. And there are three. So if you know the answer, call 235-7721 and tell Lauren, once again, this is an exhibition, not a competition. We're playing just to hang with each other. There are no prizes, except that you know the answer and that you're willing to share. So what is going on your paper? What's next for you, Mercedes?
I'd like to share a little bit more about the Sue Gibson Community Achievement Award.
Oh, good, because I want to know more about Sue.
So, as Andy was saying, this award is given under exceptional circumstances to recognize individuals who have invested in and or created an institution that empowers learning, reflection, and creativity. And we reached out to her family and requested additional criteria, and they included outreach, connection, and a knitting together of our individual experience. For those of you who may not have known Sue Gibson, she was a constant presence at the library and one of my favorite faces from my childhood because I spent a lot of time at our smaller library. And her daughter, Amanda Gibson, also shared this, and this is a quote from Amanda. Mom liked connecting with people through books. She enjoyed talking with patrons at the library about what they enjoyed reading, what they needed, and what other authors she thought they might appreciate. She reached out to homebound seniors who might not otherwise have access to the stories and information that she found so important herself. But it wasn't just about delivering books to them. It was about being with them and hearing their stories, about visiting and listening and coming every week with a thoughtfully curated bundle of stories. She loved books for escaping, for learning, for fueling her engagement and interest in the world. At the library, she used this love of books to form connections.
And, you know, that's really the important part of the town is our connections. And I just want to thank Kathleen while we're here because really KBBI is all about fostering those connections as well. But we thought that the first recipient of the award should be Dana Stabenow, who's not only the incredible author whom you all know, but this last year, a couple of years, she's founded the Story Enough Writers Retreat. And her right-hand person, Aaron Hollowell, is here to share some thoughts about Story Knife and about Dana.
I'm Erin Hollowell, the executive director of Story Knife Writers Retreat. It's my pleasure and privilege to introduce Dana Stabenow, extraordinary novelist, founder and board president of Story Knife Writers Retreat, and winner of the first Sue Gibson Community Achievement Award, which recognizes individuals who have invested in and created an institution that empowers learning, reflection, and creativity. I've been working with Dana for close to 4 years now on her vision of Story Knife Writers Retreat, a writer's residency that provides women the time and space to focus on their own work. Dana's vision of fostering women writers in the way that a residency at Hedgebrook fostered her close to 30 years ago has never wavered in all that time, and indeed, even before I came on board. Story Knife will stand as a lasting example of her dedication to creating the kind of community that doesn't end when the writers return home after their 2 to 4 weeks in residency. They will form bonds that will hold throughout their lifetimes, and they will open the doors of opportunity for each other. Dana has been steadfast in aiming for diversity in background, age, genre, and experience, so that each month at Story Knife will bring together a variety of individuals that is rich and sustaining. She has emulated Hedgebrook's radical hospitality so that every writer at Story Knife will understand that she and her work matter. Story Knife will not just enrich the community of Homer, not just enrich the women who attend residencies, but continue to enrich readers as important work from women writers comes into the world and finds its way to readers.
Welcome, Dana Stabenow.
Hey, Kathleen.
So what do you have to say about all those accolades?
Well, first of all, let me say that Erin Hollowell and I have a little bit of a mutual admiration society going on there. I'll cop to getting Story Knife up to go, but she brought us the rest of the way. It is not often given to someone who needs a special, precise person to do a job like this, and it really helps when the person with exactly the right qualifications and exactly the right experience shows up and hires herself, which is what Erin did.
Dana, we are so excited to give you this award this year. You've also been involved with the library a lot over the years and been a huge library supporter. Can you talk a little bit about what libraries mean to you?
I want to speak even more generally about how important reading is. And, of course, libraries are the main facilitator. Libraries and bookstores are the main facilitator of reading. And I want to share some of my personal experiences. My very first memory is of my mother's forefinger slowly skimming beneath the words, "Once upon a time, in a faraway land, lived a beautiful princess named Snow White. She had skin as white as snow, lips as red as blood, and hair as black as ebony." The truth is, I don't ever remember learning to read. I can only remember always knowing how. I wanted to also share some words from David Owen from his book, The First National Bank of Dad, on the importance of reading in human life and teaching, you know, your children to read as soon as you humanly can. Children who are read to regularly from early ages develop lifelong skills that can't be acquired from a VCR or the Disney Channel. That VCR kind of dates this passage. They become better listeners and find it easier to pay attention in school. Their vocabularies grow rapidly, and grammar seems less mysterious to them. They don't immediately lose interest in any idea that is harder to grasp than a television commercial. They develop the patience to follow a complex problem to its solution. They become better writers all by themselves. Yes, indeed, they do, may I just say, through their ample powers of imitation. Good readers do better in school, score higher on standardized tests, attend better colleges, hold more interesting jobs, write more persuasive legal briefs, make better conversation, and become less and less likely to gripe about being bored. Most of all, children who grow up immersed in books develop the ability to answer their own questions. Gradually, they acquire a skill shared by the greatest scholars in the world, the ability to educate themselves. So I learned to read pretty much by osmosis, sitting on my mom's lap. And then when I was about 8, my mom took me down to the Seldovia Public Library at that pre-earthquake time, one room in the basement of City Hall. The founder and eternal flame of the library was Susan Block English, who looked at me over the tops of her glasses and said to my mom, "Well, Joanne, let's start her on some Nancy Drew." I never looked back. I can't conceive of a world without books. Enough of them can't be written. Story Knife is a place where more will be. Among other authors, I was once solicited for a tagline for a T-shirt that was made to celebrate libraries. This is what I came up with. Libraries are what keep us a step ahead of the apes. It makes people laugh when I say it now, but it also has the virtue of being the absolute truth. I still have the T-shirt, and I plan on being cremated in it.
Dana, I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you maybe speak to what the role reading has right now in this time where we're being encouraged to be socially distant from each other?
Oh, I don't mind being put on the spot about that. I'm very fortunate in that I'm a hermit, both by inclination and by profession, so I spend most of my time at home because I work at home. And the single most important thing in my possession is the extremely extensive to-read shelf that I have in my house. There's a lot of nonfiction there. There's a lot of fiction there. Libraries have made it more and more easier for people to download e-books so that you'll never be out of books. I hate to put too much of a shine on this. It's a pretty scary time. But you can actually now, I mean, that you're forced to have the time to read, go ahead and read. Take a course, you know, educate yourself about some particularly arcane piece of history that you've always been interested in, but you've never had the time before to read it. Catch up on the books by your favorite author, naming no names. You can actually regard this time as an opportunity, and I would recommend to everyone that they do so.
I would like to tag in there that while the library is currently closed, you can still access books through the Alaska Digital Library and all of the library's online resources.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily, I'll tag in as well. It's something which I do all the time. If you have a PIN number, which may be required, but if you already have a PIN number, I believe is necessary, then you simply go online to the City of Homer Public Library. And there has easy links to both Listen Alaska and to the Alaska Digital Library. It allows you to access magazines, audiobooks, regular books, and they're really very easy and intuitively downloaded onto your laptop, Kindle, or other devices.
I'd like to add, though, if this moment in time is the first time that you feel inspired to access the Alaska Digital Library and you are having a little bit of trouble or challenges, you can still call the library at 235-3180. People are still answering messages, and you can also email the CIRC desk at circ@ci.homer.ak.us, and someone will get back to you.
Oh, and you get a pin that way.
CIRC is C-I-R-C?
Correct.
Congratulations, Dana, and I think you will back me up on this. What if you do get your audiobooks? What if you go through magazines and stories and novels and nonfiction and you can't find the book you want to read? We all know what that means. That's the book you need to write.
Dana, thank you so much for being our first recipient of the Sue Gibson
Mercedes
Award.
Allow me also to give you my profound gratitude for this incredible honor. I've listened to the show and heard all the other names read out, and I'm keeping some amazing company there. And to be honored by my local public library is literally the highest honor I could possibly imagine. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
That's Dana Stabenow, this year's recipient of the Sue Gibson Award, the first of many.
Do we have Steve Gibson?
Steve Gibson is, I hear, on the line. Steve Gibson, are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have the distinction of being Sue Gibson's husband for many years, and I certainly appreciate I appreciate the award very much. I think it's well deserved, and I just want to let you know a little bit about what she brought to our family because of that. She's the mom of two of our four kids, and her reading interest all through her life made those kids much more of a reader than they would have been without that influence. I was not that much of a help in that regard. And they're all now avid readers. In addition to that, she demonstrated that you could find so much identity, purpose, and contribution to your community by doing this. She was for a few years a volunteer at the library until they ran out of people to actually be on staff, I guess, sometime, and then she joined the staff. And it was obvious to the entire family what kind of purpose and fulfillment that gave her. And so we are ourselves grateful to the library for that. One of the things I'm particularly glad that she gave me was an introduction to the audiobooks through Alaska Digital Library many years ago. And since then, it has grown to be the service that Andy is raving about. It is it's tremendous. It has thousands and thousands of audiobooks or ebooks if you want to actually be reading them. But it is so nice to be told a story by a competent reader, and not only that, you can do it while you're sawmilling or ironing or whatever people spend time with doing that frees their hands and their eyes. And I should also like to say that Dana Stabenow is a really appropriate, Sue really enjoyed the diversion as well as information. She enjoyed plunging into projects to find out things with her tools at the library and became quite adept at it. She was sort of a poor man's reference library, and she enjoyed that very much, finding out information for people as well as diversion and general learning that she could direct people to. So I'm really grateful for this this experience of having Sue recognized, and especially in concert with Dana Stabenow and Story Knife. That's a wonderful introduction. And I'd like to thank the Friends of the Library very much for this honor. And I'll be communicating it with Sue to my best ability.
Thanks, Steve. You know, I think that the current library is kind of like the town's living room. And I remember the old library being more like the kitchen, in which she was one of the cooks. We all crowded around and had a lot of fun.
I think that's true, Andy. Yeah, I can remember taking her to work when we had just one car, taking her to work at the library there by where the chiropractor's office is right now. Yeah, and then before that, the library on the corner before she went to work, where Main Street Pioneer. Yeah, but Homer has given us a lot, and I'm sure she'd be glowing and grateful for this honor. Thanks very much.
Steve, thank you so much for calling in and putting it in an even bigger, better context and explaining a little bit more of Sue's life.
Okay. What's happening next? No one has called to tell me to name the three marine mammal species that are permanent residents of Kachemak Bay. I'll tell you what that tells us about Kachemak Bay, that we have these three, that an extensive food web exists here year-round for those species to eat, and that indigenous people had a year-round supply of food if they could successfully hunt them. You know how I know this? Because I have Janet Klein's 28 questions here in front of me, and she is this year's lifelong learner. And are you ready for a short musical interlude?
Sure.
Okay, if you know the three marine mammal species that are permanent residents of Kachemak Bay, call 235-7721. You are tuned to KBBI Homer, and this is the Safe Social Distance Celebration of Lifelong Learning for the Homer Public Library. And we're back with the Homer Public Library's Celebration of Lifelong Learning. And thank you, Nancy Lord, who called in and got all three of the marine mammals correct: the sea otter, the sea lion, and the seal.
Of course.
Of course.
Thank you, Nancy.
And I think we're just about to get, we're waiting for a call from Anthony Malkomikov.
So while we're waiting for that call from Anthony, I'll read a little bit of his nomination letter written by Matt Steineff. He writes, "I have gotten to know Anthony very well due to the amount of time he has spent in my classroom. As a senior, he was my aide for the first semester. He jumped right into the work and of helping me stay organized, but where he truly excelled was in the laboratory. I have always wanted a lab technician so that I could not have to spend so much time setting up labs, but there is no funding for such a position. Anthony took on the task and was able to do anything I asked of him. He learned how to use my probeware so that he could do more technology-based labs, and he was even able to be a lab aide for the science teacher in the class next door. I have been writing letters for students for about 15 years, and in all my years, I have seen many high-achieving students. Many of them have done most of the work on their own, but many with the help of parents and counselors. Anthony has support from his family, but everything he does in school, he does for his love of education and personal understanding."
Well, all right, Anthony. I think he may be one of the people on hold right now. And as soon as we get the word, I want to hear him speak for himself.
All right.
You know, the thing I'm taking away from this morning is that Janet Klein's going to be on my trivia team. Every time. I've got dibs on her in front of the entire community.
If she's not available, Nancy Lord.
Nancy Lord's number two.
Do we have time to ask one more trivia while we're waiting?
So, question number two in biology. What is unusual about hoary marmots? That's Marmotta caligata in Kachemak Bay. So what is it that's unusual about the hoary marmots of Kachemak Bay? There are two possible answers.
They're hoary.
They are hoary, but that's not unusual.
And you know what? I'm going to ask question number three, which I missed at the last KBBI trivia and which I found rereading, is what is Sadie Cove named after? Who is Sadie?
Oh, that's a good one.
Janet knew.
And
now I know.
Well, maybe you could tell us what about Sadie Cove.
Sarah Eldridge is Sadie.
Okay. Well, it sounds like Anthony is on hold. Let's see if I can grab him. Anthony, are you there?
I am here. Hello.
If you would turn down your radio, then you won't get that feedback.
Or all right, thank you.
Your speaker. But Anthony, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I've heard wonderful things in your nominating speech, but what have you come to say?
Well, I have a 679-word speech written, so just sit back and relax. Good morning, fellow Homo sapiens. Hopefully you can all hear me just fine through your mountains of beans, rice, and toilet paper, or through the echoes produced by your unfortunate lack of those items. Now, I'd like to preface this speech by saying that I originally envisioned it with the idea that it would be recorded and projected onto a fairly large screen, allowing me to make all kinds of goofs and gaffes pertaining to that fact, but it naturally fell through once the entire world was canceled due to the coronavirus. Oh, well. I'm fully capable of writing something last minute, Mr. Campbell. I am going to be a college student, after all. I'd like to begin by thanking all of the teachers and people who helped me get here, most notably my mother, Faina, for always pushing me to do my best and fueling my love of learning from a young age, and Mr. Matt Steineff and Mrs. Vicky Lowe both for furthering my passion for math, science, and really terrible, though still somehow hilarious, jokes. I'd also like to thank Mrs. Debbie Schmidt, my kindergarten first and second grade teacher, for showing me early on that teachers don't have to be boring or scary. And, of course, the Homer Public Library for awarding me this award. But what is this all about? What's all the commotion? What is lifelong learning? What does it embody? What does it mean? I believe it to be quite simple, actually. It's the knowledge that there is no such thing as enough knowledge. It's the realization that you could spend your entire life studying and still have only scratched the surface on the infinite pool of information that is the universe. It's knowing that and still wanting to spend your life learning because you just enjoy it so gosh darn much. In short, it's an acceptance of the futilities of life. A bit morbid and cynical, maybe, but ultimately not untrue. I feel it's important for many young people to acknowledge this futility, especially when it comes to their educations. It's impossible for someone to be good at everything, no matter how much people try to exaggerate on their college applications. That's not to say they should be discouraged. Far from it, in fact. They should take this hard reality of the universe and spit it right back into its face. You may not be able to solve differential equations with ease or explain what effects the Battle of Waterloo had on European monarchies as a whole, and that's okay. It's great, Ivan. You don't have to be in class to learn. Schools seem to be a little slow in acknowledging this, unfortunately. I can speak from my own personal experiences that students are pushed into too many boxes too often, too early. I know plenty of good kids that could be considered lifelong learners easily, just not with typical academia. They display incredible passion and skill in subjects like the trades, but since it's not something that can be taught effectively from a book or lecture, this knowledge tends to go unrecognized in the greater academic microcosm. Now, there are programs like Skills USA where students can compete and win against other students in activities like construction, welding, and cooking, but they lack the glamour of more traditional school awards. What I'm trying to get at here is that intelligence and, thusly, lifelong learning doesn't have to be focused on what can be taught in school. As long as someone exudes genuine passion in learning nearly everything they can about even a few subjects, I believe they can be considered lifelong learners as well. This probably sounds a little unorthodox for a strictly academic award, but I truly believe that learning doesn't solely come out of books. Now, thank you once again to Mr. Steineff and the wonderful folks at the library for nominating me and giving me this award. And please, don't shove yourself into too many boxes. Find your box and make it the best box in the observable universe. Stay learning, Homer. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anthony, for calling in. That was wonderful. So I believe next we have a file of Ruth introducing our lifelong learner, Janet Klein.
I was very impressed with the enthusiastic support from anybody I mentioned the idea of nominating Janet for this award. It began to snowball, and I stopped seeking input, rather overwhelmed with all the great material. I shall first quote Patty Jay, who was a board member during the time Janet served as curator of the Pratt Museum. Janet Klein has been a source of continuing inspiration to our community with her unrelenting curiosity and scholarship on all things historical, cultural, and environmental regarding Kachemak Bay. Her work is based on both experiential fieldwork and thorough academic research. She provides us with the most detailed documentation of the Kachemak tradition, native culture available. From her early writings on Indigenous inhabitants of the region to her more contemporary investigations of the communities surrounding this remarkable body of water, she has been relentless in her pursuit of knowledge. Dave Brann provided us with a long list of local organizations to which Janet has dedicated her time and shared her wealth of knowledge, and another long list of her publications and research projects, concluding that she continues to haunt the beaches looking for new fossils, both plant and animal. Cindy Sisson told of a rafting trip through the Grand Canyon with Janet last year, where Janet set out excitedly anticipating new experiences, adventure and thrills, which included swimming in the rapids. Awed by being in the presence of those billion-year-old rocks, Janet sent the minds of her companions into whirlwinds of intriguing new information. And this is what we have come to expect from this lifelong learner who was so fascinated by and respectful of lives lived long ago, who enriches the lives of us here and now and continues to invest in leaving the planet a better place for lives to come.
And assembled listeners, please welcome the Homer Public Library's 2020 Lifelong Learner, Janet Klein.
In thinking about what I've done over the 42 years I've lived here, I realized that when my ex-husband, Bob, and I first came to Homer in 1970, we stopped at the turnout up on Baycrest, and it was one of those beautiful blue sky days. We looked at the mountains and the hills and the spit, and questions came really fast to him because being a geologist, you know, why is there the difference between the shores and how was the spit formed and how old is the Homer spit? And Bob focused on the geology, and I went right to the what birds live here, you know, what marine mammals inhabit these waters, who were the prehistoric people who lived here, and did they occupy the spit? And I thought that the spit would be pivotal in the early history of this area. It was not. Not until the 1880s was it really important in the history of this area. We were very curious, and it was that intense curiosity about this place that guided my interest when my family and I moved here in 1978 for the first time. Curiosity is what keeps me going these days. What is usual here? What is unusual here? You know, how did these things get here? What do they mean? And much of the time I have to turn to other people, particularly scientists, because I'm the citizen in most of these citizen science projects. So today, as I'm being honored by the library as a lifelong learner, I'm taking this opportunity to honor the many, many people, the dozens, who have helped me explore this area, shared their experiences and their discoveries with me, and taught me so much more about this place. And of course, I'm honoring the libraries and librarians and museums and other places of higher learning, our college, and places like that where I have spent a lot of time enjoying what I can learn there. I am going to share a few stories that reveal how I conduct research and honor some of the people, particularly the scientists, who are often brave enough to go out in the field with me. And when I say the word I'm talking collective. My research depends so much on other people. In 2003, Steve Baird and his son were up on Portlock Plateau here, and Steve found a cache or a bundle of worked sticks. So this is up in the Alpine, treeless, no trees around. Steve noticed that the ends of some of them were beveled, which meant that people had brought them up here and had cached or hidden them with the intent probably of returning. He contacted me, and I got a permit to go up there, and I took two extraordinary professional photographers, Mary Frisch and Tom Colopy, with me. Over the many years since then, Mary has been sort of my photographer sidekick, and we have shared a lot of wonderful experiences here. In 2014, Kenton Bloom, who has hiked these mountains for 30 years, came across what he believed to be a man-made rock wall, again up in the Alpine. He contacted Roger McCampbell, who was the district manager of Kachemak Bay State Park, and Roger contacted me. And basically, the three of us flew up there that September 2014, and I verified that it was indeed a rock wall, man-made. 2 years later, in 2016, going back to try to understand the purpose of that feature and how it fit into the larger environment there, Mary Frisch went back as our photographer, and then Thomas McDonough, a fish and game biologist, went up to help document and later interpret the biology of that area. And Jason Oakley, who was then district manager of the state park, went with us. So here I had a biologist with me to help interpret and understand that particular project. Oh, there's numerous other projects. My daughter was kayaking, about 2012 over in Chinapoop Bay, and she went in to explore a coastal western hemlock forest. And she called me up and she said, "Mom, you've got to come see this forest. It is just stunning." So I did. It was indeed. It's old growth forest over there. And these are western hemlocks, unusual in Kachemak Bay. So we poked around in the forest, and as we turned around and came back down toward the water, I noticed scars, on vertical scars on many, many of the trees. And as my daughter and I looked more carefully at these trees, we noticed that some of them had cut marks in them or pieces of wood that had been hacked out of them. Subsequently, I went over there many times, and on two trips, one trip I took Dick Rieger, who is a geologist and scientist who lives in Soldotna, and Dick and I have shared many experiences down here because he is a scientist who grew up on the peninsula. And another time I took Ed Berg over, and Ed cored some trees and got us some dates, and the oldest tree he dated was about 200 years old. But people had come into this forest, old growth hemlock, seasonally, to take the bark, the cambium, and the sap. And this would have been an early spring food for early peoples here. 200 years ago, put the people there about the time Captain Cook came into Cook Inlet. Ed Berg was there. Priscilla Russell did the same project with me, but up at Chinapoot Lake, where Priscilla's ethnobotanical information is invaluable. It's always wonderful going out in the field with her and Arthur Krusky, her husband. In 1991, I was collecting coal at Bishop's Beach, and I picked up a softball-sized round bone. And I recognized immediately it was a bone and didn't know what it was. And I took it to Lee Post, and Lee didn't know what it was. And Lee took it to his friend, Mike Lettuce, who with his wife Sandy owns Timberline Creations just north of Anchor Point. And Mike has spent years studying, collecting, and carving, in some respects, Pleistocene animal bones or Ice Age animal bones. And so they identified it as an ankle bone. So I had found an ankle bone of a woolly mammoth here on Bishop's Beach, 1991. In 2007, Mike himself found part of a woolly mammoth tusk in a tide pool between here and Diamond Creek. So we got together, decided we would spend some of our PFD money to have these radiocarbon dated, and again we called on Ed Berg, and Ed submitted our two specimens to the University of California at Irvine. The dates came back, and Mike's tusk was 27,000 years old, and the ankle bone was 48,000, and so we had two animals living 20,000 years apart on the Kenai Peninsula, we hoped. So I had McKibben ask her, she's always been great, to write an article about this for the Homer News. I thought if Mike and I had found specimens, other people had also found them, including Judy Wynn, who had found a woolly mammoth tusk fragment in Mariner Park way back in 1976. The articles went out, and every article McKibben wrote, except one, elicited a response from a reader. Today, we have 24 specimens from step bison, woolly mammoth, we have a horse tibia, and we have numerous unidentified bones, one from a carnivore, of animals who lived in this area. We have radiocarbon dated 13. They range from the oldest one being Judy Wins at 21,000, and then the ankle bone I found at 48,000. This was a huge citizen science project with many scientists doubting us, as we doubted ourselves for a long time. Dick Rieger was the geologist who was able to explain the geology and the glaciology of Kachemak Bay that allowed the presence of these animals here on the peninsula. Dick and I eventually ended up giving a professional paper in Fairbanks to a group of scientists, and then the paper was published the next year in the Alaska Journal of Anthropology. Oh, Toby Wheeler, Phil Gordon, Elaine Brown, Grace Mills from Nanilchik contributed their knowledge and their information to us and helped us pull together this great project. I couldn't do this without, as I said, all these people, but I also depend heavily on educational organizations, whether it's libraries, museums, colleges. I've taken a lot of classes here at the local college, swing into the library all the time and use the vertical files there. Many people don't even know they have them or what vertical files are today, but I depend heavily on their collection of Kachemak Bay books, geology, paleontology, history, archaeology. I couldn't do it without the library and also their very strong interlibrary loan program. So when my daughter Deborah and I were researching dinosaurs of Alaska to write a book about Alaska dinosaurs, I depended heavily on the library to get a lot of the obscure scientific papers or to lead me in directions of some of them so we could get them online. The library has been and will remain critical in my research here. Let's see, 2017. My family, Deborah and her husband George Rising and the two sons, Kai, who's now 8, and Silas, who's 6, they used to live here for many years. And one of our favorite things is to hike the beaches. In fact, Deborah grew up here with her brother Tim out East End Road, and we used to hike the beaches all the time. We took now my grandsons back on these beaches. And, of course, curiosity pervades this family, and anything and everything we see that's unusual or interesting, we consider. We were hiking here 2 years ago, and we were on a local beach or an area beach. Kai walked over to what he thought was a piece of petrified wood, and he picked it up, flipped it over, and his mom said, "It has teeth." He had found what was identified initially by Dick Rieger and then by Pat Druckenmiller, who's the paleontologist at the University of Alaska Museum of the North, as a tapir molar. And a tapir looks like a large hog, but it's related to rhinoceroses and horses. So Kai had found an entire mandible, both sides of the jaw, of this tapir, and we realized that it belonged in a research institution. This was a novel find, so Deborah arranged to transfer it to Patrick Druckenmiller, again, the paleontologist up at the Museum of the North in Fairbanks. Patrick identified it also as tapir, and it is now up there, and Patrick has cleaned the teeth that were exposed. He's cleaned them, taken them down to the root line. Hopefully he can find more time to continue cleaning this tapir mandible. But Dick Rieger, again, was very instrumental in identifying that, and so was Tom Cooper, who owns Alaska Horn and Antler carvings up in Soldotna. Both of those men have been most helpful in our Pleistocene and now our tapir project. These things are out there, and no, I'm not on the beach all the time, and I do not go out deliberately looking for things. I may pick the tide. If I don't want to waffle between high tide and low tide, I may go on a 14-foot tide that keeps me closer to the bluff or something like that. But no, I just go out, and if it's there, I'm so fortunate to find it. And if it's not there, I've had a wonderful beach hike regardless. The people who have found a lot of these woolly mammoth molars and tusk fragments primarily hike between Diamond Creek and Bishop's Beach. And that's where most people hike, and that's where most of the woolly mammoth parts have been found. The 6 step bison horn cores have all been found on the beach around Diamond Creek. So we have a small herd of step bison that used to live in that area up there because they've been found nowhere else at this point. people started looking more, started asking more questions. You know, we had a good response. People pulled some things off their bookshelves in their home and said, you know, I've had this sitting here forever. What is it? Well, you have a woolly mammoth molar fragment. And so people became very curious. It just sort of snowballed on that project. Usually, if it's a bone, we go, of course, to the Homer bookstore, to Lee Post. And Lee has done incredible research on bones of this area and ones that he doesn't know. Then he reaches out to, like, Mike Lettuce. I reach out to zooarchaeologists. I have sent the bone, the ankle bone, I have sent that to various zooarchaeologists at UAA and passed it around, seeking a consensus for identification. And I actually should thank the people who nominated me. Some of them are people who have worked with me in the field and, you know, recognize what it takes to learn something new about this area and share it with others through whether it's publications or radio programs like yours or classroom visits, college classes, things like that. I just spoke at West Homer Elementary to two classrooms here a week ago. The kids had some wonderful questions about being on the beach and finding things, and anybody can find something. You just need to be alert and watchful and recognize what's different, what's unusual about this.
Janet Klein, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and thank you so much for that, all you have done for our community so we have a better understanding of who we are and how we got here. I would also like to thank everyone who participated this morning. We are so grateful that you made MP3 files, that you called in, and we're grateful for what you give our community, and especially KBBI right now, who is doing so much work to keep us informed and to keep us connected. Celebration of Lifelong Learning, the live event, was canceled, and it is one of our annual fundraisers, and it's not the only fundraiser that was canceled. So I want to give a shout-out to all of our Homer area nonprofits and just say, if you were planning on attending a fundraiser and now you're not able to, show some love to them some way, somehow, whatever you can. I know things are tightening up around here. But thank you for listening in. Andy, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Oh, yeah. Thanks to Janet and everyone else for making me feel remarkably stupid. The Janet's books are fantastic. They're really easy reads about the history of Kachemak Bay. For instance, her work at Aurora Lagoon was fantastic on its archaeology there. And it's just they're great guides, easy read guides that you can share with your children as you travel around Kachemak Bay. Are beautiful, and thank you very much for having written them. Thank you for Dana and all the kids from whom we heard. You are extraordinary. You reinvest into Homer, both at the library and everything you do, and it's just fantastic.
Can we let the Gibsons have the last words? I have a final note from Amanda Gibson. She writes, reading is solitary, and Mom loved that. Absolutely loved it. But books and libraries are also connective nodes. They bring us together to confront the frightening, enjoy the fantastic, and appreciate the complexity of the world. So let's read and stay connected as best we can. Thanks so much, Kathleen.
This has been the Coffee Table on KBBI Homer AM 890. Thanks for attending the Homer Public Library's Celebration of Lifelong Learning. Coming up next, it's Line 1 Health Connection from APRN. Right now at the airport in Homer, fair skies and 27 degrees. And for the Homer area today, patchy freezing fog before 10 a.m., mostly sunny with a high near 38 degrees, northwest wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. This is listener-supported public radio, KBBI Homer. The time is 10 a.m. Good morning.